Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast. My name is Hajun Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time. And with me today is my co-host, the OG, Ryan Whitfield. And I'll say this, before Ryan jumps on here, he has caught me absolutely flat-footed in our clothes in the last two podcasts. I vow he will not catch me flat-footed again. And all you might remember that last weekend, in our last podcast, at the very end, he managed to slide in a comment about Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter and that crazy $4.5 million that somehow was given to him / stolen from him. I don't know how reckless you have to be to let someone steal $4.5 million from you, but that is a little bit unbelievable in some sense. So, Ryan, I'll give you a chance now to actually sound off on Shohei Ohtani because you've caught me flat-footed twice in a row, and I didn't get a chance to actually address anything that you said there. So let's talk about this just for a split second. Like $4.5 million, originally he's like, I gave it to him, and now he's gone with, he stole it from me. I'm assuming that you think it's impossible that he gave him $4.5 million. What do you think?
Yeah, so I don't think I'm that strong on the show in a funny, comical way. So I think it's important that I say right off the rip that this is not a joke. Banished from the league and jail time. Like, I'm not kidding.
Whoa.
If you've done any of the reading on what has gone on here, again, I'm taking this from a source from the radio. So they were talking about three specific bets. One was like a $10 million multi-leg parlay that was placed on the three bets specifically. I don't know what percentage of the overall bets that were placed this is, but there was three specifically where there were days where Ohtani was on the mound, and it was things like 4.5 runs over under, and he's given up 5 or 6 runs. A guy was a dominant force, and all of a sudden, so even if you believe his story, which the My Friend Did It story is like the adult version of Dog Ate My Homework. Even if you buy that, like, his friend is just happening to bet on the over three different times when Ohtani's on the mound and he goes over? Like, come
That's
on.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that additional piece of information there. I didn't realize
and
that.
And if I'm wrong, but then, again, I'm going off of what I heard on 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston yesterday. If that stuff is true, that is filthy. And you know, as somebody who's a bit of a baseball purist, Shoeless Joe Jackson is one of my all-time favorite baseball players that I'll never get to watch play. But he's not in the Hall of Fame for a reason. When you the integrity, this is the whole thing with Calvin Ridley, you know, when people started getting mad a year or two ago or whatever and said, well, you know, you can't punish Calvin Ridley. You know, the league promotes gambling, and then they're punishing a guy for gambling. That's two-faced or that's double standard. Like, no, it isn't. The integrity of the game is the only reason we watch the game. If the game loses its integrity because of point shaving stuff, whether you're the Boston College men's basketball team in the 1980s, you're Tim Donaghy in the late 90s, early 2000s, or you're the biggest baseball player on the planet, it cannot happen. It cannot be permitted. And you know, the Toronto Raptor player who I'm forgetting now, who's also got a horrible scandal out there right now. Like these players, if the stuff that is being reported that I'm hearing on the radio and stuff is true, jail time and banished from sports forever. Like, that is the only thing that's acceptable. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Donaghy did jail time or at least had to plead out or whatever. Like, there should be criminal investigations into it. This is not just a league issue. This is people lose money too. You know,
you bet under
on Ohtani because you think
someone's leaving.
He's
someone's
out here
losing
potentially
money.
Shaving points. Can't happen. Can't happen. Yeah, can't be permitted. Can't be allowed.
And you're referring to Jonte Porter, a center of the Raptors, who's also under investigation by NBA for some gambling issues right now. You know, I had not heard that, honestly. I actually, that's new information to me. I honestly thought that he was trying to do a solid for his friend and paid the bookie directly. What I heard was that at least this is what was circulated. Who knows what the truth is, but that he paid the bookie directly in order to avoid having to trust his friend, the interpreter, to pay off his debts with the money he gave him because he didn't trust them to do it. And then reverse course on saying that he did it because he was afraid that, or was advised that, paying a bookie directly basically makes him in violation of, you know, the gambling policy, and that could endanger his MLB career. So I had not heard this entire thing about the parlays matching up with his performance and him betting specifically on Ohtani's performance on the mound. That's insane. Oh my gosh, that's a completely new light.
And I'll try to verify that, because I'm going off a radio report, and they were specifically talking, and they were citing, you know, where the bets were being placed in China or Japan at the time. So I don't have the specifics again, but this was a segment yesterday on a local sports station. So again, if I'm wrong on that part, that's fine. But like, but yeah, I mean, again, if Pete Rose has had to face, you know, anyone who's done this, like,
sure.
This is like, this is still the one thing that you cannot allow in sports. And again, all the gambling fans out there who are like, well, they're promoting gambling out of one side and the other side. Like, again, if the players are on the take and affecting games, I mean, Jonte Murray's thing is ridiculous too, right? Like, you know, betting the unders on his, you know, giving out unders to a community of people on Discord, I heard. And then bagging out of games with eye injuries 3 minutes in. And like the most amount of money won on those specific nights was on Jonte Murray in a league of stars. That's the guy who they're seeing the big. I mean, just like these two stories together, like, can't happen. Can't be allowed.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel that Jonte Murray's story is a little bit more explicitly bad, but I certainly, if the facts turn out to be true about Ohtani and his interpreter, that would be pretty horrible, and I completely agree with you. So, wow. Oh, look at that. A news segment. I didn't mean this to be a news segment. I was just going to give you some props for throwing me off my game at the end of a podcast over the last 2 weeks, and we actually end up talking about something serious. Oh, that is what we do here. All right. Well, thanks for updating me on that. I think we're going to have to circle back around to that next time that we talk, because this is a developing situation, and certainly I agree that should not be something that's part of any sport. But hey, listen, today let's turn this back to the NFL for a little bit, because we got a lot to talk about. We're talking about all 8 major rules changes decided in the past week, which will go into effect in 2024, including that crazy XFL kickoff rule. So let's get rolling with that. All right, the NFL team owners made some huge changes this week. The NFL announced several major rule changes aimed at increasing player safety, enhancing replay, creating more excitement in the game, et cetera, et cetera. They had all sorts of reasons for it. Let's talk about all the rule changes that are going into effect in 2024, and we're going to take them one at a time, and we're going to take arguably the biggest change in the rules, and that is the kickoff. And if anybody has watched the XFL, then you've seen this before, because the NFL is changing the kickoff to a model what the XFL has been doing over the last 2 years in hopes of making them more exciting while continuing to keep players safe by preventing them from running full speed into each other on kickoffs, which has been a concern of the NFL for the last several years. And there's been some complaints about them making the kickoffs less interesting. So here are the main changes to the NFL kickoff rules. There's essentially 8 of them. I'm going to walk through them, and then I'm going to turn it over to you here, Ryan, to get your reaction on this. So the kicking team will still kick from the 35-yard line, but the players on the kicking team will line up on the opponent's 40-yard line. So they're going to be across midfield, lined up on the opponent's 40-yard line. The players cannot move, and the kicker himself cannot cross the 50 until the ball hits the ground or a receiving player in what's called the landing zone, which is the area between the goal line to the 20. That's really, I mean, I could have just called it the red zone, really. But, yeah, the landing zone, which is the goal line to the 20, or the end zone. That's number one. Number two, the receiving team must have a minimum of 9 players line up in the setup zone, which is between the 30 and 35-yard lines, with a maximum of 2 returners lined up in the landing zone. Number three is any kick that hits the landing zone must be returned, while any kick that bounces into the end zone from the landing zone must either be returned or downed by the receiving team for a touchback to the 20. This is interesting because it changes a lot, I think. But number four, any kick short of the landing zone gives possessions to the receiving team at its own 40. Any kick that hits the end zone and is downed is a touchback to the 30. And any kick that goes out the back of the end zone is also a touchback to the 30. Number five, there are no more fair catches. Number six, there are no onside kicks until the fourth quarter begins. And only for a team that's trailing. And then that time, the current onside kick rules would apply. Number seven is kickoffs after safeties will be from the 20, and the kicker can actually use a tee now. Everything else stays the same in terms of the landing zone, et cetera. And finally, penalties that carry over to kickoffs would only impact the spot of the kick, not the setup or landing zones, and not where the players line up. Okay, that is a lot to take in. So, Ryan, you want to take a stab at this first? What are your thoughts on this new NFL kickoff, which basically models what the XFL has been doing over the last 2 years? I mean, it's weird, right? Because quite frankly, what it really is you're like lining up both teams on the opponent's side to stare at each other as the ball hangs in the air, and you're forcing the kicker to not kick it out of the back of the end zone. You know, you're saying basically land it in this like 20-yard landing zone area, and they're going to have to return it. But everybody starts from a standstill in the opposite side of the field. So no more running down the field, no more gunners, no more any of that. So speed doesn't even matter anymore. I mean, it does laterally, I suppose, but you don't have to get downfield anymore. So it's a little bit weird, don't you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've seen it before. I've watched, you know, some videos of it over the last 48 hours here.
Yeah,
What I'll say is that, and I had to watch it because you said, you know, to any of you who watched the XFL, you might have seen it, and all one person listening that's watched an XFL game said, yes, me. This is my time to shine. But I mean, it's been a non-play now for, you know, close to a decade. So I don't have a huge issue with them trying something new. Jabril Peppers, I saw him tweeting, being all pissed off about this. And I think this is in conjunction with some other rule changes we'll touch on. But, like, he was also, he's like, you know, they're taking away. But like, the play that you watched growing up, Jabril, is gone. It's been gone for at least, you know, the last part of the last decade and the whole part of this decade so far. So, I don't know. It brings it back in. My thought is, to your point, it feels really disadvantageous to the kicking team. Now, I would have to look at XFL data, but to me, you know, you've got all that runway and all that speed. For, you know, if the returner has any vision, he's just coming downhill and trying to find a seam and go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd have to look at data because I don't have the answer off my head. My gut reaction is not that it's going to be like, it's not going to be 50% of the time, but like, you know, I know the newest form of kick returns, I think it's like sub 2% of the time that there's a touchdown now. And, you know, so if the old way in the NFL was, you know, the traditional way that we all grew up with was, you know, 10% of the time in the touchdown or 5%, I would say that this feels like it'll double it. I feel like it's more of an advantage to the receiving team, the kicking team. I have zero data on that, and we'll have to see when it comes out to the NFL. But again, it makes the play exciting again because, like, whether it was Devin in 2006, starting off a Super Bowl with a kick return touchdown.
The kickoff return for a touchdown.
As painful as it was for me as a New England Patriot fan, as an 8-year-old boy in 96, watching Desmond take the opening kickoff of the second half back to the house for Green Bay. You know, like the big games, those moments, like it doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, I'm it was either this or remove the play completely. So I'm open to them trying to find a way to you know, to keep it safe because it's a dangerous play and they want to make the league more safe. That's just the way it's going. I know we can all be upset that Sean Taylor would never build a play in today's NFL, that ship is you know, it is the sport that is what it is now. And so I would rather that play have some meaning. And
be,
you know, there's some
just be like set up as a dirty or something. Yeah.
And there's interesting wrinkles. There's some kickers out there, who are good place kickers and there's, you know, but their teams don't have them, on the kickoff. Where whether it's a punter or specialist, like there are some situations like that. I think that it's going to be more onus on having a guy who can actually kick off the ball in a way. Because a bad kick here, I think, makes it even harder to defend. So So I think it makes the play interesting, which is overall all I'm asking for is every play to matter in an NFL game. So that it, in the spirit of that, it works for me. Now, if it gets goofy, if this results in like I said, it won't be 50%, but like pretend for a second, humor me that it is, like, then yeah, no, I don't want that. Like, I don't, like, this, if this gets out of control for the offensive side of things, that would be stupid. But short of that, I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, and I, it's interesting. So it's interesting because the XFL, with their kickoff, at least according to current data, has had their kickoff 97% return rate compared to 22% for the NFL last season with traditional kickoff. So you're right. There will be a return, right? Because there's you are automatically saying you must return. There's very little else you can do here, assuming that your kicker actually has some accuracy, because now it's not like boot it out the back, which we see a lot. It's, you know, boot it into this 20-yard space in order to force the return, because you boot it out the back and you're giving them, you know, relatively good starting position at the 30. I mean, I understand it's only like 5 more yards or 10 more yards. You know, people may quibble over what a big difference that might actually impact, but at the end of the day, it certainly does have an impact. And, you know, I'd like to see that 97% return rate versus 22%. Yeah, sure. 3-4 times more plays to watch. I think that's great. Now, I will say this, though, and this is just personal, because obviously two of the, you know, 5 or 6 best returners in history were Bears, with Devin Hester, Gale Sayers. So I love the return, right? And like you said, Devin Hester taking that ball back in the opening kickoff in the Super Bowl for a touchdown might have been one of the most exciting things that I've ever seen in my life being a Bears fan, you know, even though we ended up losing because, you know, Sexy Rexy can't take a snap. But, you know, that being said, I do think that this is going to be a good thing. I do think that this is going to be tough because the onus on the kicker being accurate is going to be really important now. And I do think this changes special teams dramatically, because it used to be speed, you know, getting down the field quickly. And as a returner, it's a different skill set when you see a bunch of guys flying down at you and trying to figure out, how do I move in order to create a seam? Because you can influence movement of a coverage team coming to flying down the field. It's very hard to influence movement of a team standing still, you know, like, you know, 20 yards away from you, because they can easily see where you are and set up. And yeah, you know, a juke here and there, you might get one guy to go, but it's going to be very hard to influence the entire field. And that was a huge skill set of some of the best returners in the league, is influencing that coverage team as they fly down the field. We'll never see that again, and those players will be very different. And coverage teams are going to be very different, I think. You know, lateral movement being much more important than kind of like going downfield. You know, that 40-yard dash, not as important anymore, but, you know, a 3-cone drill may be more important when you're taking a look at folks who are going to be on your special team. So I agree with you, Ryan. It's a good move. I'd rather see more plays than less plays. I understand why they're doing it. I think player safety is the most important thing. I'm going to miss the returns, but we weren't having them anyway. So I guess at the end of the day, this is better than what we had last year. And that's kind of where I'm standing. The one thing I'll point out, though, I'll say this. I think it's weird that you can't do onside kicks until the fourth quarter. And I think it's weird that you can't do onside kicks until the fourth quarter unless you're trailing. I mean, there are situations in which you might want an onside kick when you're actually ahead by a point or two, with time running down, with, you know, whatever timeout situation might be. If you just don't if you trust your defense or you don't trust your defense, there's a lot of, like, strategic reasons to allow onside kicks for those team that's actually leading, and perhaps even earlier than the fourth quarter. I mean, we all remember onside kicks coming out of halftime, right, and completely changing things. I believe the Saints, I think Sean Payton did that at least once. So what are your thoughts on that, you know, limiting the onside kicks and limiting who can actually do it?
Yeah. Again, I don't have the data in front of me, but I know that over the last couple years – that the change in the kickoff game in general made onside kick harder to convert, which is why they've messed around with the idea of going forward on, you know, like, of whatever, a 4th and 10 or a 4th and 15 play, like, one off to get it. So, like, I think they can't do the kickoffs the way they used to. So, like, there are going to be some parts where, you know, that losing that element to it is not, I guess, ideal, but I think it's going to be part of, like, a couple different adjustments, because I do think that at some point you're going to just be able to elect to go for, you know, a conversion play to get the ball back.
Yeah,
I'm not losing my mind, right? Why am I also now thinking? I'm also doubting myself. That doesn't exist right now, right? You don't get to go for it on a fourth and
I know that. Okay. I think the UFL was thinking about doing that, right? They're trying to.
No, what it is is my the AFL, which is my town doesn't have Pop Warner. We have AFL, and that's what my son plays, and that's what we have. We don't have onside kicks. You got that. So I knew it was I know I've talked about it in the NFL. I know I saw that last year, but I saw it at my son's football game that I coached. So, so that's where that came
close.
From. But no,
that's close. Yeah, it's football.
I just wanted to make sure people weren't like they didn't watch football last year. They did it in the league. but no, so I think that is a second wrinkle to this is like ultimately where this is headed. And again, like in terms of and if you want to make it 15, like make it even more difficult, like I'm all for that. But yeah, Pat Mahomes down by a score scores a touchdown. I'd much rather, for the excitement of as a viewer, go the ball be in his hands to convert. And if you want to come out to start the half and go for it on fourth and 15 instead of kicking and retain the ball, like all that stuff, I'd much rather that. I think that's more entertaining because I think the onside kick is a lot of luck. And so I hear what you're saying about the idea of retaining the ball. That not having the option for that sucks. But the onside kick is such a crapshoot and such a luck play that I don't really love that. Meaning if you get another shot or not.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting because the onside kick obviously has changed dramatically over time. I mean, way back in 2018, it was at 8%, and that was a drop from like over 20%. And then it went down to 6%, and last year there was this one successful onside kick conversion. So, it's gotten to the point where it's almost not even worth using anymore. So perhaps it doesn't change anything. But I do kind of think it's odd not to give the team the option to give it a shot. All right, let's get to the next guy, the next one here, and this is the hip drop tackle that's been banned. I don't think there's any – I mean, there's been players that are coming out on both sides of this. The NFL has now kind of banned the swivel hip drop tackle. The specific language in the new rule is it is a foul if the players use the following technique to bring a runner to the ground. A, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms, and B, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs or leg at or below the knee. So Mark Andrews obviously suffered a serious ankle injury when hip drop tackled by the Bengals last season. Andrews actually commented that he wasn't for or against the tackle or banning it. He didn't blame the player for his injury. He said he was playing hard and that he doesn't, that's just the way the game is played and this happens. Other players had different views on this in terms of not banning it and banning it. And I think you alluded to this earlier, Ryan. What do you think about this rule change banning the hip drop tackle?
Yeah, I think the players are being babies a little bit. I'm just gonna be a little long winding and I'll get to the point as quickly as possible here, but like, I get why the defensive players are a little bit frustrated by this. Ultimately, like, because, there was dramatic with the injury last year. The plays get shown over and over and over again when this hip-hop tackle is being used. It's not rampant. Like, it's not some big issue. Like, you're not going to notice this huge change. And guys, headshots have been outruled in the league for about 14, 15 years now. I'm trying to think back to when Brandon Merriweather couldn't stop getting headhunting penalties for the Patriots, and I think it was like around 2010, 2011, where they really started to rule that out of the game. And it's not really until like the last two or three years you've seen this drop tackle kind of creep its way in. So for 11 years, defenders knew how to tackle without using it. So, like, again, it's not going to be dramatic of a change, and I don't think that over the last year or two that it was super fit, like where it was happening all the time. Again, the moments when it does happen, we see it, and we see it again. The guy gets hurt, and so then it gets shoved down our throats on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram, and then the storyline comes in, so that happens, and it becomes a bigger deal. But like, at the end of the day, this is back to the kickoff thing. Like you said, player safety has to be number one priority, and that's like a virtuoso thing to say. But like, follow the money and follow why this has happened, and it's the current players. I hear this all the time. The current players will tell you, I'd much rather have my knee, my head taken out than my knees taken out, right? That's been the narrative that's been existing for 15 years.
Sure.
Well, no, that's yeah. bullshit, because it was ex-players that were suing the NFL 15 years ago
right.
during the whole CTE development. I'm forgetting the doctor's name that was played by Will Smith in the concussion movie and stuff.
Right. Right.
They might think that now, but in 15 years, when they start doing again, for people who didn't watch the movie, story, Mike Webster from the Steelers was ripping his teeth out and super gluing them back into his freaking head. He was losing his mind so much, living in a van down by a river, like Chris Farley-esque. Like, so, yeah, yep. the nearsighted current day NFL player might say, I don't need my head protected. I want my knees protected. And, oh, they're ruining the game. Just put flags on us and stuff. Like, if ex-players hadn't sued the NFL and the concussion report had not come out proving that they were hiding all they knew about brain trauma and or trying
right.
to get into science or trying not to know about it, then
yep.
then they don't make these rules in the first place. So it's like you're trying to blame the league and yell at Roger Goodell, and it's like but it's the ex-players who did it, and they did it for a good reason, because again, Junior Seau shooting himself in the chest so they can study his brain. Like, I mean, like, this is light stuff that happens from the CTE brain stuff.
Yep.
You know, I mean, this is life altering, dying or losing your everything in your 40s and 50s, becoming violent with people in your life. Like, so like, again, they can just miss me with all this sour grapes whining stuff over this. Like, and honestly, like the hip drop tackle, in my opinion, is dirty. It is not just them trying to take somebody down. It is intended to take a guy out. Now, headshots
were
dirty
too.
And
though,
again, I grew up watching them and I liked it.
On the legs are, but like if you're going to hip drop, and that's the way the rules being put is being set up, so that if you actually trap the runner's legs at or below the knee, I think that's the key, right? If you're going to tackle somebody and you're not going to do that, then it's you're probably going to be all right. But if you tackle somebody over their leg below the knee, you're gonna break something, you're gonna hurt something, it's just gonna happen because you have your entire body weight bowing that thing down to the ground. So I think that's really the crux of the rule.
Yeah, and like again, as somebody who coaches at the youth football level, which you have to do a ton of training for, and I'm not pretending to be Mike Ditka here, but like, you know, the form tackles they teach you are things like the gator roll, right, where you drive the shoulder through and roll across their body and snap around like a gator does when he's attacking somebody in the swamp and stuff like that. Like, there's nowhere in there where they say take your, you know, wrap him and then take your ass and throw it into the back of his knees and drop on his ankles, his knees, and all his ligaments. And like,
yeah,
it's just like, and again, until 2 or 3 years ago, the first 10 years of not being allowed to headshot, they were not running around doing this. So
right,
like,
right.
you were able to tackle from 2014 to 2010, sorry, to like 2021 without doing this. You guys will figure it out. So it's just, again, the player safety is because like it's what the people want. So you can get mad and say they're making it hard on us. Like, people want to see offense. People want to see stars not getting hurt. And between
yeah.
the hip drop tackles and, again, whether it's turf or some kind of new substance they're all using that's weakening their Achilles, but between all the alarming rate of Achilles injuries last year, like, they got to do something, because the Jets were going to be a cool storyline last year. This is the New England Patriot fan saying this. The Jets were going to be a fun, interesting storyline last year, and we lost
it
the night of. Like, we don't want that. We want
yeah,
good players
on the field.
We sat there
and watched that game on Monday night. I think it was Monday Night Football against the Bills, and it was just like, what a deflating thing to happen to the Jets and for NFL fans, you know, generally. But so listen, I totally agree, Ryan, with what you're saying, and I agree with the entire concept of this. I just think that it will be a little bit challenging to officiate this. I mean, you got to land on and trap the runner's legs at or below the knee. I mean, I guess as long as they're touching it, it's going to be probably going to get called. But it may have some officiating issues along the way. But I do think it's a good idea. There's no reason to have the hip drop tackle there. I totally agree with you there.
Can I make one request?
Yeah, go for
it. I'll cross sports for a second. This is going to be like, you're right. And it's going to be easy to get mad at the referees early on this, because it is going to introduce the referee thing. This, to me, is going to be the same way I felt about the MLB last year, the pitch clock, and people getting mad at guys getting thrown out because they were sitting there asking for a ball 2 or 3 times around. I think Scherzer was the big one last year. You know, he was asking for 2 or 3 balls, and he gets thrown out, or maybe it was the catcher got tossed. One of the two got tossed, and everyone came after the ump, and it's like, no, they know what they're doing. They have a pitch clock, so now they're trying to find effing workaround rules to dink around with the thing and slow the game down. So you want to play stupid games and get the F out. So whenever this inevitably does come in and it's something that's questionable, I personally will, and I hope the rest of you will join me, and not going after the refs, who do usually drive me nuts, and go after the player and say, dude, don't try to skirt the line right up to it. They don't want this tackle in the game. It's a dirty shot. Stop doing it. You know, and I think we'll get there eventually. Early on, I think a lot of people complained about the headshots, but by about 2015, I don't think there were a lot of people out here defending Vontaze Burfict for not learning that the NFL was no longer allowing you to do that, right? I think we all kind of realized he was villain, not the refs. So I think we'll eventually get there on this.
Yeah, yeah. And just for the record, I actually love the pitch clock. So I think it's a fantastic addition to Major League Baseball. But that's beside the point. We got a bunch of other rule changes. There's only one more I really want to talk about, and that's the changes to replay. But let me go ahead and run through the rest of them real quick so we can inform the listeners on what they are. So trade deadline, it's 1 week later. Instead of week eight, it's going to be week nine now. The next change is coaches no longer have to win the first two challenges to get a third challenge. They only have to win one of them, and they will get a third challenge. It changes a little bit. Enforcement of fouls on change of plays, change of possession plays is a little bit, okay. But anyway, during a play that results in a possession change, if fouls are committed by both teams, any major offensive fouls, like unnecessary roughness, that were committed before the possession change will now be enforced. So that's good, I guess. And then designated to return players from playoffs, there's an unlimited number of those now. There's no limit on the transactions for designated return players during playoffs. And lastly, emergency third quarterbacks who are available to play in the case that, the starter and a backup are ejected or injured can now be elevated both from the 53-man roster and the practice squad. Before, it used to be only the 53-man roster. Okay, so the one I want to talk about last is the replay, because there have been some changes to the replay. People love it. People hate it. So this will be interesting. So here are the three replay changes. The replay assistant will now be allowed to correct, quote, objectively incorrect calls for intentional grounding and roughing the passer. Number two, the replay review will be allowed, quote, when there is a clear and obvious visual evidence that the game clock expired before any snap. So I'll read that again. When there is clear and obvious visual evidence that the game clock expired before any snap. And then number three, ruling a passer down by contact or out of bounds before throwing a pass are now reviewable plays. So those are the three changes in replay. What do you think about those three changes in replay, Ryan?
Oh, my God. I hate it.
Wait, do you hate replay generally? Is that what it is? Or do you just hate these changes?
I hate replay. I hate the fake quest of replay as much as I hate the fake or the way it elongates watching these sports. So I think I've gone on the soapbox before, but I've said, like, again, there's this never ending pursuit of perfection that you all have that is never going to freaking happen. And so the best thing you said there, I'm not even going to get into the individual rules other than what you said on the number two thing. The second point there is the first language in there was clear and obvious.
Right.
If there is clear and obvious anything, New York should buzz the referee. He doesn't need to go to a monitor. He doesn't need to do – like, you have a head of officiating, and maybe regionally have a few assigned to each games or the whole department in New York. I don't know how the inner workings happen in New York. New York has replay opportunity. So in the New York office, there's a team assigned to every game. They watch the replay back and say, clear and obvious miscall there. Buzz it. Ref comes on. Correction. Thanks for the replay in New York, X, Y, and Z. That's a touchdown. And we all freaking move on with our lives. Like, so now they get, if they get one out of the two right, they get a third. What are we doing? If it's clear and obvious, correct it on the field by the thing. Like, again, the whole pomp and circumstance of the jogging over the monitor, going under the hood, watching it from 35 freaking different angles and coming back. The clock thing, right? The play clock, people do this all the time. Oh, I hit zero. It's the same thing again across sports again. You watch hockey. To get the icing, you got to gain the red line to dump the puck in. If you dump it within like a foot or two of the red line and you're on the wrong side of it, they're not going to call it icing. And if the play clock hit zero a millisecond or 2 milliseconds or 3 milliseconds ago, we're not blowing the play dead. Guys, I'm not here to watch an officious rule fest, like, to be honest. Like, not to knock your profession, but I'll go watch Law and Order if I just want to see a bunch of people argue over rules all day. Like, I'm here to watch freaking football. So, again, correct the clear and obvious, and like, let's get back to the game, because that's what I'm here for. And it already has, and I love football, but it already has the third worst pace of play. Go watch a basketball and hockey game. It's up and down, up and down. This is something that people say, people here stateside call soccer boring. If you talk to people across the pond about soccer, they go, well, your game has 8 seconds of action and then a 40-second break. 8 seconds of action, a 40-second break. There might not be a lot of scoring in ours, but at least it's continuous.
Right. I mean, a 60-minute game takes 3.5 hours, you know, so whatever
makes
sense.
Doing? Like, just correct the call and move on, please.
Yeah.
So, like,
so it's interesting.
Make everything reviewable, but make it instant. Please, don't make me wait.
Right. I agree with that, but I think the problem with these particular rules is they use terms like objectively and clear and obvious. I don't know how you figure that out. I mean, like, so one replay assistant goes over there and says, well, objectively, this is an incorrect call for intentional grounding, so I'm going to reverse it. Okay, but you, by definition, are subjective because you're one person. So I don't really get this. I don't get the standard. And if you're going to say, listen, intentional grounding and roughing the passer can be overturned, great, that's fine, but don't throw in this weird language in there to make it sound like it's has more weight than it really is. And to your point about soccer, you know, in overseas, and I watch rugby, so I know nobody in the U.S. watches rugby probably, but they have what's called a television match official who theoretically reviews rules as the game continues. So the game keeps going, and they can review rules, and they're looking at replay and stuff as the game continues. They don't stop the game to do reviews. So it's good because things keep moving. It's bad because in the Rugby World Cup this year, there was actually a penalty that was called literally 4.5 minutes after the play was done, and one team had already scored again at that point, and they had to reverse time in order to fix it. And they said, oh, you know what? There was a penalty 4.5 minutes ago that we didn't call, so let's take those points off. Everybody back up and go there. Pretend the last 4.5 minutes didn't happen. So, you know, things can get really out of hand when replay gets involved. I totally agree with that. Anything that slows down the game is a bad thing. You know, if you want to make it reviewable, but make it a time limit or something, and don't use like objectively weird terms, like objectively, that are just going to be impossible to validate. So I agree with you. I don't think we need more replay challenges. I don't think we need more changes to this. I think we just need to speed it up. Now, wasn't it the XFL or the one of the other one of the UF was it USFL maybe who had like live, like they did the replay live and everybody got to see along what they saw, and they had like a time limit and it was like streamed to the audience. I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, they kind of kept them, you know, basically accountable for getting the call done quickly, and everybody get to see what the ref was seeing. I thought that was pretty neat. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think, that would be a fine middle step, but it has to be, again, like the clear and obvious to me, like this is not a great clear defined definition, but like
if it takes you
more than four camera angles and you have to zoom in and zoom out and piece together three different angles, that's not clear and obvious. It just isn't. Yeah. So like again, like just like we can't zoom in and do all this, like, because again, it's just pursuit of perfection. I always go back to the analogy of, you know, we need 8 teams in the college football playoffs. You people still, since the expanded March Madness from 64 to 68, still bitch about the 69th, the 70th, the 71st, and the 72nd. I saw a whole article on it the other day about the first 4 teams who didn't make the March Madness this year got screwed. Like, you guys understand that if you expand the field to 100, you'll bitch about the first 5 left off. Like, this is just the nature of
it. Only if it's
like,
my team, like, man. I only bitch about it when my team doesn't make it.
And I get it, but it's like, again, the example I always go back to with football is like, you know, we add a replay to not lose, you know, clear and obvious calls. And I think this was in my bio when I used to write for our site years ago. But, like, you know, we're all pretty much still split 50-50 if that was a catch or not by Dez back in 2014, right? So, like, did replay solve that? Did we all get along? Do we all see it the same still? No, so we'll never be perfect. So since we can't achieve perfection, stop wasting my time watching the guys in stripes over there rewatching, because I'll make the same joke. I'll go back to the well. I'll watch Law and Order or C-SPAN or CTV. If
Law and Order is a good show. I don't know why you're showing shade on Law and Order, man. It's a great show.
I'm just saying.
C-SPAN sucks. All right. I mean, that's objectively bad. That's clear and obvious.
There are places to do that. I don't need to do that in football. I know, like, I'm not sitting in knowing everyone shows up wearing their jersey, shows up wearing the NFL rule book so we can watch people litigate. Like, I got other stuff to do.
I'm going to start carrying one, though. That's a great idea. I'm going to carry an NFL rule book around everywhere I go, just like the Constitution. It's going to be so much. It's going to be so cool. I'm going to be the most popular guy in the stadium for sure. All right. We got down to the end here. And by the way, just for the record, college football playoffs are 12 teams now, man. So it's expanded even past what you were angry about before. So
And guess what?
I'll be pissed off if Notre Dame's at 13, I'm telling you.
That's what I was just going to say. If Notre Dame's at 13, you'll be bitching. I will be bitching about it.
Book it, guys. I will be bitching about it. Number one on Twitter saying all the crappy
things
about
how they
team,
should be. But it's more annoying when it's the third party people being like, well, that team played great on the stretch. They deserved it. They should have played better early on then.
That's right. Try playing good the entire season. That actually helps. All right, guys. We got down to the end of the show here. Let me hit the air horn on the show. We did a little bit of overtime here because we love you guys, and, of course, we want to get through all the rules, and there's so many of them. Hey, Ryan, give us your social media so people can follow you.
Yeah, you can follow me on at Ryanfield NE. Sorry, I just did a little quick. I was doing some fact checking while we were on here today. I'll have to dig in more, but I reached out to I don't even know if I can say a source, but a person about the segment I heard on the radio yesterday, and they were telling me that it was posted on Twitter. The details I was talking about was posted on Twitter by Tommy Smokes of Barstool Sports, I believe is the one they're talking about. So I don't know how verified or vetted that is, but I'm just clarifying now where
good. You got a source. That makes sense.
Information came from. So regardless, Ben, if he's involved in any way, shape or form on this, even if those specifics are not accurate, can't play again.
It'd be a real shame, but I agree with that as well. All right. You can find me on FB Garbage Time on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it, or on the Football Garbage Time page on Facebook. As usual, thank you for listening and wasting time with us. Until next week, hope your NCAA brackets aren't completely busted, and enjoy your NFL week.
Hey, as we're leaving, did you see Kate Middleton's ring disappear in that video?
What? Did you just like, what? I'm not even prepared to answer that question, dude. What video?
We'll talk to you next week.
Is this like a thing now? Is this our thing?
This is my new sign off. It's the sticky bandage.
Now I gotta go do some research. Thanks so much, Ryan. Now I gotta do some research.